getting that confidence to kind of go, you know what, this is my weakness, this is my weakness, this is, let me fix that. Mm. That's the bit that changes our industry, I think. And I don't know how we encourage that. Yeah.
There should be more magazines, some real interviews, you know, rather than fluffing around and thinking we're living in a lovely world of barbering where everything's amazing. You know, we've got to address these issues and we've got to encourage them. I think it's about encouraging people to step up. But I was working too much. A lot of people say, Phil, you got to slow down. You know what it's like when you're in the shop, you eat standing up out the back. I was wolfing down a soup and a sandwich. And
inhaling your lunch.
Exactly, running back out. And then I was hiccuping through my next client. And you know, there's some colleges out there doing a fantastic job. Unfortunately, there's some colleges out there that aren't. So if you go to do a barber course at college, you really want someone with that experience that's going to teach you the techniques that could possibly make you shop ready. I always say if you're going to do a bricklaying course, you wouldn't want a plumber teaching you how to build a brick wall.
Yeah,
really important to do it properly.
Welcome to The Noble Barber. This is a podcast for barbers by barbers, cutting through the crap of the industry. We all want to know how our businesses can run better. I want to talk to people who've done it, messed it up and got it right second time round, and can tell us the way that you and I can make our businesses better.
Welcome back. We are here as The Noble Barber, and I'm chatting now with Phil Jarman. We're going to kind of talk really, Phil, well, if we can start talking about, we both have quite strong views about the industry and our skill bases in the industry. Your academy is much more based in kind of improver and, you know, taking qualified people. Does that sound like a fair...
Yeah,
fair
no,
idea.
Definitely, yeah. The Phil Jarman Academy now has basically been going for about 10 years, but in the last 2 or 3 years, I've been concentrating more on the academy than being behind the chair as such. And it's basically to make barbering a lot more simple, because it is quite a simple trade. It's been complicated over the years by the section gods out there, or whatever you want to call them. But yeah, so basically I am really keen on making it more simple for barbers. It's all about client retention. I talk a lot about that as well. So I do three types of courses, one for beginners. So people who are sort of new to the industry and want to learn, especially if they've been on a course of some description before, but they're not really shop ready. I can really help them with that.
Are you meeting quite a lot of people? You know, that shop ready is a really big tag. I meet a lot of barbers who have done City and Guilds. They've done a variety of courses that they've managed to get funded by government. Some that have done paid for 7-8 week courses, who are definitely not shop ready. Are you meeting enough of those, or do you think that's something that our industry should be kind of pushing these people towards a little bit more?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do meet a lot of people, a lot of disappointed people who have spent a lot of money on courses. And, you know, before you go on a course, I think at the end of it, you can dream about being that barber who's got a massive clientele. Yep.
Well, that's what they're on it for, isn't it?
Making X amount of money. And I do feel a little bit sad for them in respects of they're not ready yet. And some are. Depends what course you go on, depends who teaches you. I think it's so, so important to get off to a good start. But yeah, so there is a lot of people that I help become shop ready, and it's actually quite simple.
But I mean, a lot of the people that tend to do well, I generally find there's a kind of personality that goes with being a barber that you can't, well, you can maybe kind of practice, but you can't train into people. Do you come across many that you're just like, you're going to be on a longer route to this because of your kind of personality side?
You know, it's such a good thing you mentioned that, because there is a lot of people who have got a great personality. So over the years, so many mums and dads who were clients used to say to me, can you teach my son to be a barber? And I said, listen, I want to meet him first.
Yeah.
And the reason I wanted to meet him is just think, right, you know, if he's got the personality, he's pretty much halfway there. I can teach him the skills to be the barber, but you can't teach someone necessarily to have a personality.
No.
There is some barbers I know who I've taught and they're very quiet. You know, they don't master the chair, so to speak. You know, they haven't got the personable skills that will make them a lot more successful, but they have had the skill set that I've taught them, but they haven't been as successful as someone who has got the personality, as I say.
So if we've got, I mean, this is the thing that I'm really am concerned about our industry. I think, yeah, we're constantly talking about the kind of the boom of the barbershop, You walk down most streets now, high streets and kind of not high streets, and you're seeing several barbers. And so these people are out there, but so you've got all these shops opening, but everyone I speak to is struggling to find staff. So we've got this void. So we obviously are finding that people are coming into the industry and getting, well, dejected, let down, fed up, and not continuing with that career.
Yeah, that's so true. I've spoken to a few people who have been on barbering courses and they've only lasted 6 months, been behind the chair. If I could flip it the opposite way, I think if you are taught properly, you're given a gift. You are given a gift if you're taught properly. You're given a gift that you can also pass on to other people. It is a transferable thing. I really, you know, think that we've got the best job in the world if we can make people happy. I mean, what a job. If you,
We do come out as kind of, you know, the happiest industry a lot. Now, you're saying that you've only run three courses.
Yes.
I jumped over
That's
you previously.
Okay.
You run three courses. One, which is your beginners.
Yes.
The other two?
Yeah, the other two very popular courses as well for hairdressers who want to become barbers. Hairdressers who basically, when they see a guy walking in the shop, they're all running out the back and hiding. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do that skin fade. They don't want to do that blend. They don't even want to use scissor over comb necessarily or razor cutting and all these techniques that I make it a lot more simpler. So it's to give them more confidence. Mm. And more confidence comes with obviously client satisfaction and their own happiness as well, which equals customer retention, which equals more money.
I mean, I do find a lot of hairdressers now don't have any skill in short hair cutting, you know, even, you know, big salons and so on, that there seems to be this fear of short haircuts for this last couple of generations of hairdressers out there.
Yeah.
And how do you find hairdressers adapt when they come along and do that?
Well, do you know, a lot of them are frightened. They're only frightened because they've never been taught properly how to make it more simple, you know, and a lot of people say to me when I'm doing my course, oh, you make it look so easy. You know, when I'm on stage, they say, you make it look so simple, but it is actually quite easy and it is actually quite simple. It's just getting to know
the knowledge
to do
and
it,
having
yeah.
that discipline.
And
then your third point of college, which your third course, which I'm kind of most interested in, is aimed at kind of, you know, the kind of barbers that are just bored.
Well, the
would bored, that be a fair, would that
stale,
be a fair way?
Stale's another word, stuck in a rut.
Yeah.
I have a lot of barbers reach out to me, which is really good that they're reaching out, because at the end of the day, sometimes we are in an ego industry. No one wants to think that they're not good enough, but you know, I'll be surprised. Well, I'm surprised the amount of people who still contact me and say, can you teach me my skin fades are 45 minutes or they're an hour, or you know, how can I make it more simple? And it's an absolute pleasure to see someone respond and react. But by the way, I tell people I'm in the 36th year of my apprenticeship. That's what I like to tell people. You know, I'm always, I mean, I've been in Bristol last week working with a guy from South America. I have never seen fades quite like it.
No, it's great when you see and good people. Being, you know, being surrounded by better people is very exciting. No, definitely. Yeah. So with, I mean, you know, I had this conversation a couple of times earlier with other people, you know, and I'm very aware that a lot of our industry are, that the individuals are self-employed. And you're talking about a sole barber who's, you know, paying his chair rental or whatever, to kind of encourage them to learn more skills, I think is the difficult bit for our industry, where you have so many, you know, people just, you know, independence, to give them that encouragement to go out and spend money.
Definitely. I think there's an old adage, the more you learn, the more you can earn.
Yeah.
So whether
do you like a little rhyme there, mate?
I love it. I love it. I remember hearing that a few years ago and I thought, I'm going to remember that. Will come in handy one day. Now,
there you go.
Now it has came handy right here. But it is true. There's a lot of truth in that. I think the more you learn, the more you can earn. You were mentioning about hairdressers not, you know, confident in short hair. I'd also say barbers are not confident in longer hair. But, you know, if you can literally be the all-rounder, it's a fantastic thing. But going back to the question about self-employed people, it is important that they invest in their future because, you know, it depends how you want to make it. You know, you can just keep faking it till one day you hopefully make it, or you can actually address
put in the work
and reap the benefits.
I think that's the tricky bit. I mean, you know, as a store owner, yeah, you do have to do, you know, you've got to keep investing. You've got to make sure everything looks right. You've got to make sure that everything's clean and tidy, that everything's up to date. at least annually give the place a good once over, if not more often, whether it's your website or your whatever you're doing. You're always doing some sort of monitoring on your business. But the independents who are just behind the chair in someone else's, getting that confidence to kind of go, you know what, this is my weakness, this is my weakness, this is, let me fix that. Mm. That's the bit that changes our industry, I think. And I don't know how we encourage that. Well, hopefully you do.
Well, I'm going to take a pot at it anyway. No, I think it is good. I think awareness is good. Mm. I think there should be more podcasts talking about it.
Yeah.
There should be more magazines, some real interviews, you know, rather than fluffing around and thinking we're living in a lovely world of barbering where everything's amazing. You know, we've got to address these issues and we've got to encourage them. I think it's about encouraging people to step up.
Well, I think that's the bit. And I think our industry, like I say, which is glorious and I love it, and I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't. And the idea of this is to kind of, give people that little lifeline to try something different, to gain the experience. And as you say, your 36 years of apprenticeship, you're teaching now. You must have been a point where you made that move from working behind a chair, and you must at some point have been one of those stuck in the mud barbers. You must have got bored behind the chair and started itching for something else. How do you make, I mean, I know you've made quite a big move now with the academy and you're still behind the chair and you've got other stuff going on. Just in a kind of, if you can take you back to that first move where you went, oh, actually there's more to life than being behind the chair.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? How do we encourage
our
industry to kind of put themselves out a bit?
Well, it actually came by default for me because of I was smashing it behind the chair. I think I worked out, I've probably done 250,000 haircuts in my career, which is a lot. But I was working too much. A lot of people say, Phil, you got to slow down. You know, it's like when you're in the shop, you eat standing up out the back. I was wolfing down a soup and a sandwich. And
inhaling your lunch.
Exactly, running back out. And then I was hiccuping through my next client and I really became ill and I had an illness, which I decided it was time for me to take a step back from being full on behind the chair. And I kind of, it was a natural progression really, to doing more stuff in the academy, moving down to the South Coast, getting in the sea every morning, changing the way I was. And I'm loving it now because, you know, there's such a satisfaction from teaching people and seeing people improve and making the job more simple, which, you know, I think everyone should have that opportunity. So, and it's great now. Education has just gone from, you know, strength to strength. I'm very proud to be the head of education for Gamma in the UK and also I travel all over Europe with them. So it's literally a bit of spin
of
plates.
There are more and more companies that are taking that on board. You see across them that there is most now are bringing up either associate academy or some sort of academy courses. But as a barber, if I'm working behind my chair now and wanting to do something else, you know, I was at Salon a little while ago and wandered around the modern barber stage and there were, you know, Wahl was doing a bit and there's lots of, you know, generally an awful lot of fading, which is, you know, hey, I guess the showstopper for our industry stage work. But these guys have given up some time. How do we, you know, just can we talk a little bit about getting away from behind a chair?
Yeah, do you know, I think...
And monetizing it as well.
Well, that's a good point. I think being on the stage from behind the chair, being on the stage is probably, you know, one of the biggest privileges you can have of passing on your knowledge, passing on what you know, but it's also a huge responsibility. I think the responsibility is bigger than the privilege. I think you've got to remember that. So if you are going to get on stage, you are going to put yourself up on the chopping block, dare I say it, you really need to know your subject and you need to be confident because it's a responsibility that you are going to be inspiring people, okay? You're going to be inspiring people. It's not just, hey, everyone, look at me, I'm on stage. It's a great privilege, as I say, but the responsibility for me is a lot bigger. You know, so you've really got to know your subject and you've got to be able to teach. I remember the first time over 30 years ago, American crew came to the UK and I was the first one at Earls Court ever to do the weekend for them. And it was my first time on stage and I swore I would never do it again.
Right.
I had Trevor Sorby, I had Guy Kremer standing there watching me. And I was just like, oh my goodness, what am I doing? I'm never doing this again. This is torture. But once the dust settled I learned a lot from it and I took stock and I went again. And it's something I would recommend any youngster out there who is behind the chair, or even if you've been doing it for a long time and you've got something to show, something that you can help people with. Because if you're coming from not the place of ego, you're coming from the place you want to help someone, I think it's a great place to be.
Yeah, no, I think that's the nice thing that I've discovered. You know, I mean, I've been in the industry, you know, a similar amount of time, I guess, and I've owned stores for, I think I'm coming up to 30 plus years of owning stores and employing and all that kind of stuff. But I love at the moment, the industry seems much more sharing, much more open. You know, when I came into it and early doors, you asked another salon owner or another barbershop or another hairdresser what they're up to, they just said, I'm really busy, great. I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, we all know the stock answer. But, you know, we see this share now, which is really nice. And, you know, I watched the, you know, yeah, I watched the guys on stage at Modern Barber, but I was also looking at the crowd. And, you know, they were seats filled. They were engaged. They were interested. And that's a big heads up to our industry for being out of share. But we need to kind of make sure that the younger group, I think it's very easy for the old boys to be peddled out on stage, decades of experience. But, you know, I really hope we could find a way of getting the younger gen, which we certainly saw at Salon, or on the stage, doing more imagery, educating. And, you know, getting them into the colleges. You know, we've spoken briefly about City and Guilds, which I think has probably room for improvement, I'd have thought, and is probably causing the industry the most amount of headaches, that we're getting an awful lot of people coming in and then leaving quite quickly. How do you say to talking to, you know, your younger self now, about getting away from behind the chair occasionally, doing something a bit different and experience the whole industry?
I think for a youngster getting involved in the industry, I think it's a fantastic opportunity now, because you're not just behind the chair. Mm. You know, you've got photography work you can get involved in. You've got from YouTube videos, you can do tutorials, you can do fashion shoots, you can do stage stuff. There's so much more than just standing behind the chair cutting hair. And I think if you're a youngster out there, my best advice is do your homework. If you really want to reach out to clipper brands or scissor companies, there's some fantastic scissor companies, Mataki scissors, and as I say, Gamma Tools, I can stick up for now. They're fantastic. They're looking for the young blood, the future of our industry. They're really, really looking out for them. So you've got to make yourself known. You've got to put yourself out there. Yeah. Basically put yourself out there. Hone your skills as well, though, because obviously if you are going to be in front of the camera, you have got to be on top of your game. So,
I guess that is that. You know, the first thing you do, first show I did was the worst. You know, first podcast we did, probably Boys, wasn't that bad. But, you know, hopefully they keep improving. And you've got to kind of have a stab at it.
Definitely.
And challenge yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
But equally, it does tend to, you know, since I've been doing this, our industry does lend itself to sharing and having that kind of confidence to just, like you say, drop a tool company a line. I'm thinking about this.
Yeah, for sure.
Putting your Instagram out to other people. Which is how we met.
Mm.
Yeah, and chatting to you earlier, you know, your career has, bobbed and weaved right the way through, that you've ended up, should we do a little bit of Crawley Town and
ball
and stuff? Should we talk about a bit of football on the end of this?
Well, I think being a barber is fantastic because you do a lot of networking. You know, you've got people on the chair and you've got everyone on the chair from, you know, well, you name it. You've got a really big cross-section of people. So I think business is something that I've always had a keen eye on. Football is something I've had a massive passion for. As a failed footballer, I went into being a barber. And the opportunity with Crawley Town came up to be a non-executive director. And I used to get all my clients, you know, living in round about the Crawley, Gatwick area. I had a lot of big logistic companies. And, you know, I'd invite them to a match day. It was great. You know, and I used to have the gaffer come up. And then one day, I got the phone call to say the club was going into liquidation. Mm. So literally I had a 7-day winding up order. I could either take the club on myself for a pound or a penny, probably what it really was, and take the debt on. So I decided to do that. And oh my goodness, what a couple of years.
Yes, that's a learning curve.
It was amazing. Mm. And we went from the Blue Square Premier into League Two, into League One. and took on Manchester United at Old Trafford in the fifth round. Right. So I got to meet Fergie twice within a week. I mean, it's incredible. It's what dreams are made of. But a funny thing is, a lot of people around boardrooms around the UK, Jim Smith was at Oxford United, and I can remember he was a QPR legend.
He was.
He basically turned around and said, how can you be a barber and own a football club? And when people used to stick it on me like that, I used to turn around and say, well, do you know what? If you've got 10 minutes, I'll sit down and I can write a business plan out for you. Mm. I said, if you want to do it. So it's possible. Business is business. And it was a great time. Great, great, great time. Mm. Well, I really enjoyed it.
But I mean, I only brought that up really because, you know, and yes, everyone now is starting to learn that I am amongst the sorrowful group of QPR fans, certainly this season. But that's why I think it's an industry unlike most others, that you can venture into other things. Certainly kind of, you know, with social media, you can start getting a portfolio together of your stuff that never, that you wouldn't have had before. But it's just encouraging. I wanted to really, you know, get you to encourage people to have a pop, you know, to approach, you know, Modern Barber or any of the other publications with your work, to get out there and make that contact.
Yeah, definitely. I think if you are going to approach Modern Barber, it's really good to, I'd even do a course on photography. I would definitely do a course on photography. You'll find out from someone who's doing really well, ask them for advice, ask them for help. And I think, to be honest with you, I know a lot of lads in the industry, I've spoken to them, said, what camera are you using? You know, how are you getting that look? Really, really put yourself out there. Just put your hands up in the air. Be vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think that's that bit, vulnerability. I think that's the hope. That's the nice thing about that kind of this new generation of barbers coming through, is hopefully they're seeing the kind of spectrum that we've got.
Yeah.
And will embrace it.
Definitely.
While I've got you, if I can kind of drag us back to a bit of education.
Yeah, that's fine.
And certainly that, you know, I'm starting to meet more and more people who've had other careers that maybe weren't as satisfying, who have decided, maybe because of lockdown, maybe for different interests, have taken up barbering and they're coming into the industry. And we're kind of default with sitting guilds and the main college courses. What do you think are the weaknesses? I know how I'm feeling about them. What do you think is going wrong, and how could that be as an industry that we could improve?
Well, I'll be totally...
Just giving you a blunt...
Yeah,
one.
I'll be totally blunt, but I think it's so important if you are going to be doing a barbering course for someone with barber experience to be teaching you. And you know, there's some colleges out there doing a fantastic job. Unfortunately, there's some colleges out there that aren't. So if you go to do a barber course at college, you really want someone with that experience that's going to teach you the techniques that could possibly make you shop ready. I always say, if you're going to do a bricklaying course, you wouldn't want a plumber teaching you how to build a brick wall. Really important to do it properly, but you wouldn't want someone from another trade. And hairdressing and barbering are different with techniques, as we know.
And you're certainly seeing with like LSB, which, you know, punts out some great courses and of these kind of 6, 7, 8 weekers to get people, maybe not shop ready, but certainly on the right track, do have some, you know, great barbers working for them.
I mean, there's...
Why are we not getting that in the rest of the colleges?
Probably down to recruitment, you know, or it might not be as... how can I say it? It's prestigious to go and work for a college. The colleges might be a little bit old school. A lot of people might want to be the barber who is in barber training academy. It might be a little bit, I'm just talking off that. I do know the Men's Hairdressing Federation are a body within barbering and hairdressing, which are absolutely, I can 1,000,000% recommend what they are doing at the moment. They are really hitting the nail on the head with barber education. They really are. I really do look up to them.
And is this, again, from the people they're recruiting to run their courses with them?
Yes. I think that's really important. To recruit the right people to do the education is paramount. But they've got it right. So if there's any other barber companies or people who want to get into academy training and they want to expand, you know, I'd reach out to the MHFED. Adam Sloan is the guy that runs it down there. Reach out to him and he would be more than happy to help and assist, especially with the qualifications as well. You can pass that on because it's really important to get the right qualifications.
Well, I think that's the bit. It's going to be down to that research and looking out. You know, we've seen from our team that they're benefiting, you know, hugely from going on other courses. You know, and they learn some. They don't always come back kind of you know, renewed. You know, they've come back. I knew about 80% of it, but the 20% I didn't was really valuable. But they spent time with 4, 5, 6 other barbers, and that kind of early doors of networking for that generation is starting to come about.
You know, when I finished my apprenticeship in Port Glasgow in Scotland, all those years ago, I moved down south, and to be honest, I was so lucky with the training I got. I mean, the guy who taught me, I still look at him now as one of the best barbers I've ever seen. And I've worked all over the world with some of the best and some of the worst, but I have learned from every single one. But I came to London. Guy Kremer was the men's hairdresser of the year that particular year.
Yeah, that's right.
I went on his course in Kensington Church Street, where L'Oreal was based at that time. And he stopped, and he stopped the whole class in the afternoon because I was razor cutting someone's hair. And he said, stop. And I thought, oh my goodness, what have I done wrong? And he said, what are you doing? Can you explain to the class what you're doing? I said, what I'm doing, I'm razor cutting to take away the bulk, to keep the length, to create shape, et cetera, et cetera. He kept me behind after. I went down to a salon in Winchester during the week and I showed them some more skills that I could do. The very next Monday, I was at L'Oreal working side by side. He gave me that opportunity to show my skills. And I think that is so important. Mm-hmm. If you're out there, it doesn't matter how big you are in the industry, give someone the opportunity to work beside you. Give someone the opportunity. A lot of courses I do charge money for, obviously, but there's some that I wouldn't. Yeah. And because I really want to help the individual.
But do you find, being a bit of a devil's advocate, not wishing to overload your in-tray, but if we have people listening to this, watching this, that did start sending you some stuff through?
Definitely, yeah.
Is that something that...
You know, there's nothing... I've always got time for people who want to learn.
That reaching out point.
You know, and I do think if you pay for your courses, you're not being taken under duress, you know. I sometimes go to colleges and I do free stuff for colleges because I want to give back to the industry. But sometimes the college lecturers tell me some of these courses, they don't even want to be on them. But, you know, if you are paying for your course, if you are really putting yourself out there, I truly believe that you're going to want to learn. You're really going to want to learn. So basically, if anyone really wants to find out some simple stuff, please get in contact with me and I can arrange. I travel all over the UK. I travel all over Europe at the moment as well. I've recently been in Maastricht. I've been in Istanbul, in Brussels. I've been in quite a few, Sweden. And I've got quite a lot more in the pipeline as well. So it doesn't matter how far away you are. If you've got the numbers to do the course, as in people who want to be on it, I can definitely accommodate and come out.
Excellent. Well, I think that kind of opportunity to reach out is the thing that I really wanted to get through from talking to you today. Yeah, I think, you know, as a networker, I found you really engaging. And hopefully we've inspired a few to, at the very least, send their Instagram out to a few product companies, to a few tool companies, or to annoy your in-tray with
a
need for advice to take it further.
Bring it on. That's fine.
But... Thank you so much.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you for watching this episode of The Noble Barber. If you liked it, please do like and subscribe. If you've got comments of what we should be doing in future, please give us your questions and we'll try and find an expert to talk to. Or if you're the expert and you want to come on here and help, stay in touch, we'll get you on. Come and join us on the sofa.